For far too long, the left in Canada has been isolated, fractured, and divided. We need to find some common ground and unite in our struggles. To this end, a conference is being organized called Rebuilding the Left, and it hopes to be the first step in building a structured anti-capitalist organization that can carry out joint work and discussion amongst progressive people and groups. Please join us on October 27th and 28th at the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education, 252 Bloor Street, West Toronto. For more information on the Rebuilding the Left conference or for registration, please call the Rebuilding the Left Organizing Committee at 516-2966 or email rebuildingtheleft@yahoo.com.
This is Danny Glover, and you're listening to CKLN in Toronto. It's happening. Okay.
And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live here on CKLN 88.1 FM. My name is Baylito Sanchez. We come to you every Saturday from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. Joining me on the line now is Manuel Rosenthal. Manuel is a physician and a surgeon, former director of the Institute for the Prevention of Violence at the El Valle University of Cali, Colombia, also a Colombian Deputy Minister of Health in 1993. He's also worked with the Cree, the Dene, and the Inuit communities, coordinating health development projects in northern Saskatchewan. In Toronto, he is a member of the Research and International Support for Colombia, RISC, and LASOS, a coalition of Canadian organizations establishing progressive partnerships with Colombia. Wow, that's a long list. Thank you, Manuel, for being with us. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Okay. Manuel, why don't we talk first about your recent visit to Colombia? We've been talking a lot about Colombia on CKLN 88.1, about the Plan Colombia, about the current situation of violence that exists in Colombia. This conference that you went to, I believe it's a democracy and peace conference.
It was a conference organized by three universities, Antioquia, Bolivariana, and the Carlos III Institute from Spain. It took place in Medellin. It was a three-day conference, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of last week, and it was called Peace and Democracy. Its purpose was to bring together in an academic environment all the different perspectives and positions around conflict, war, and possible solutions to these problems. So the conference brought in people such as representatives from FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, who spoke on a teleconference to the audience and responded questions, followed by the commander of the paramilitary forces, who sent a video where he read a speech on the subject responding to questions, and a mayor of the Armed Forces of Colombia, who's also a historian and presented his views, also a member of parliament in Colombia, many other people, indigenous people, and so on. I was invited to present on globalization and violence. So it was listening to different perspectives and debating them.
What did you find to be the most, the thing that sticks in your mind the most from the conference? What was different about this one? I know that you've participated in others before.
Well, what was different was several things, but one of the most outstanding ones was that you would have in one auditorium paramilitary forces, the Revolutionary Armed Forces, the army, and the parliament of Colombia speaking at the same time, and then a broad variety of people with different perspectives listening to their point of view and actually having the possibility to analyze and debate these things. But what became obvious about the situation of Colombia now is that there is a conflict between a growing peace negotiation process and the need for it and the will Colombians have to see these processes develop and succeed, and then the those that are interested in war and benefiting from war that seem to have more power than those that want peace to carry on with the process. And I include in this both the wealthy corporations within and outside of Colombia, and most of all the United States with its Plan Colombia, a $1.5 $5 billion, mostly military intervention within Colombia that is actually threatening to destroy a very difficult and developing peace process.
Did you sense optimism there, or did you sense that there was a real a sense that the like you say, those who are interested in war have so much power and in it are investing so much in this? This is a huge amount of military assistance that Colombia is now receiving, more than it ever has, and it was already receiving so much. How do people deal with that?
Well, the general feeling in Colombia, and particularly at the conference, is one of major concern. People fear that everybody tells you that things are going to get a lot worse very soon unless some kind of miracle takes place. Parallel that was made is very useful. It's one where one compared the time when the arms race was taking place between the two blocs, the Soviet bloc and the US or NATO. The situation is very similar now in Colombia. The U.S. aid to the military and to the armed forces of Colombia through Plan Colombia has led the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia and ELN to begin a major race to arm themselves as well. So the argument from both sides is that they need to arm each other to be in better conditions to negotiate, which actually leads to involving most of the civilian population in the conflict and then closing the doors for a negotiated solution. So there is major fear and the feeling everywhere that the war is going to extend all over the surface of the country. And there were several presentations of a known fact now that this conflict will extend throughout the Latin American region and is already involving the Andean region as a whole. So we are going to see, and that's everybody's prediction there, save one or two exceptions, we're going to see an extension of the war within Colombia and throughout the Latin American region.
And certainly with the instability over the last 10 days or so in Peru, there's also, of course, a lot of concern that things could turn for the worse in Peru as well. Manuel, I want to ask you specifically, you spoke about globalization, and you also mentioned the corporations that are involved there. Let's talk specifically maybe about a few cases or just briefly about the Canadian corporate involvement in Colombia and how they are involved in keeping this war happening.
There wasn't a specific discussion on Canadian involvement, although there was a scholar from that was invited there, Stephen Randall, for the University of Calgary, who spoke mostly about United States foreign security policy, and there was somebody from Geneva who spoke about the U.S. policy around drug trade and so on, and the mistakes and the misconceptions around Plan Colombia. But I can tell you in general, one, there's ongoing research now about Canadian interest in Colombia. There is increasing information coming through about oil interests, Canadian oil interests in the area of Putumayo in southern Colombia. It's part of the Colombian Amazon, and it will be the target for fumigation and armed activity supported by the U.S., with U.S. helicopters as part of Plan Colombia and so on. There's a map of the Colombian oil company, Ecopetrol, that shows the different regions of the country. And in Putumayo, which is the area where most of Plan Colombia is going to be made effective, I would say 70% of the area is going to be explored or exploited by Canadian corporations. So Canada's corporations certainly have a role in there. There's a lot more research that is needed to illustrate this issue, but it has to be unveiled. At the same time, there is a lot of involvement from the Canadian governments and NGOs and so on the other end of the spectrum, in support for human rights and in support for alternative solutions different to that of war and so on. So there are interests, and we need to pay a lot more attention to this. One example that many people are already aware of is a Canadian Crown Corporation involved in URA. That's in the northern part of the country where a big dam is being constructed and a previous dam was constructed, URA, in the territory of the Embera Catio people, indigenous people of the area. One of them visited us here in Canada and went to Parliament not long ago. The Embera Catio, as we were at the conference last week with international presence within Colombia, the paramilitary forces took away, retained 20 people from the Embera Catio, murdered 4, and then murdered a 5th one. The Emberas from one community, 200 people, had to abandon the community and run in fear of the return of the paras, who promised to come back and kill more people. Now, the connection between these happenings and multinational projects is obvious. There's an interest to build a big hydroelectric dam in that area that would produce and generate electricity that would be exported all the way up to New Mexico, destroying native land permanently. The project would only survive for 20 years, yet it would destroy a millenary culture, an environment, sacred territory, and the right of people to live in peace. And that is one example of why there is an ongoing war in Colombia.
Now, there's also the case of the UWA and Occidental Petroleum, which, by the way, is a company that Al Gore, the environmental vice president and soon-to-be candidate for presidency, is involved in. Tell us a little bit about UWA, because they have a very particular struggle in Colombia, indigenous people fighting with the petroleum companies.
Yeah, the UWA are in the northeastern part of Colombia, nearing Venezuela. They're extraordinary and exceptional indigenous people. In about mid-17th century, the Spanish were exploiting gold in the area and enslaving indigenous people around it, around their territory. The UWA are known as the thinking people. That's what UWA means when translated. These are the people who know how to speak. They were recognized by the other indigenous cultures around them as the people who never warred against the other ones and always managed to talk their way into peace. These people were going to be enslaved when the Spanish conquistadores were searching for gold, and they refused to become enslaved. So what they did is, they put their children into clay pots and walked backwards onto a cliff. And more than 4,000 native people killed themselves. In fact, the river that used to flow at the base of that cliff runs in another direction because of the numbers of corpses that were there. Now, the King of Spain at that time, recognizing their bravery and dignity, forbid any Spanish colonizer to get even close to their territory and recognize their bravery and their right to their land and culture. They were left alone for about 400 years. And ever since 1940, Occidental Petroleum Company, as well as Shell, started explorations and found large oil deposits in the sacred territory, the Samoré, as it is known.
Right.
A struggle has ensued since the 1980s where Occidental has tried to have these people removed from their territory, and in 1985 they threatened to kill themselves, commit suicide again, if they were removed. That has led to the government to stop the exploration and then again to order it back and forth. In fact, during this process, the director of Occidental in Colombia, the CEO in Colombia, has accused them of being guerrilla members, which has allowed paramilitary forces to act on them and kill some of the UWA leaders. It also has played all kinds of dirty tricks, whereas in February of this year, the armed forces asked to go through UWA territory. In goodwill, people, the UWAs allowed them to go through, and as they were going through, they chased them with tear gas and beat them. 3 children ran into the water to escape in fear and died, drowned in the water. Then, with protests throughout the world and their leaders coming even to speak at the shareholders convention of the Occidental Petroleum Company. And the government, the president of Colombia was in New York at the Summit of the Americas recently, the Millennium Summit,
yes,
and stopped at the Occidental Petroleum's office. A week later, ordered an eviction of the UWA people from their territory so that the land could be exploited.
Jeez.
And last week, the UWA presented the official document where the Spanish king recognized their ownership of their land after they committed suicide in the 17th century. With that document, the government, through international and national law, cannot at all exploit that land or evict them from there. Yet it is carrying on with the process of exploration and exploitation of the land. So the struggle of the UWA is similar to that of the Embera Catío or the Nazca or the black people in the Pacific Coast in Colombia.
Mm.
The real war that is going on in Colombia is one between autonomies of different peoples to protect the land, save the land, and guarantee a future for everyone, and against the extractive initiatives of multinational corporations with the support of the Colombian government, army, and paramilitary forces. The UWA are an example of what's going on there.
Manuel, you worked as in health development in the north, North Saskatchewan, actually, with Cree and Dene and Inuit communities. When you think about those experiences and having gone through that, what connections do you see?
Oh, I'm glad you asked me that question, because I had the opportunity to work up north, as you say, and the lessons learned and the connections between the indigenous peoples of Colombia and the indigenous peoples here were extraordinary. Both peoples were trying either to protect or to recover their own cultural values and identity. Their very strong links to the land and the fact that they believe they're alive to protect the land they live in, the concept of territory rather than the ownership of land, and territory being the sisterhood and brotherhood with all living things, and the fact that human beings depend on the life and the protection of nature to survive, and in fact that we are part of nature and without it we cannot survive, led to struggles in northern Saskatchewan to protect against uranium mining, logging corporations that came around, and also to recover rights over the land and to its protection. So it is the same story, the same problem, and I'm sure you've observed, and so have others, that throughout the Americas, from the north to the south, indigenous peoples, including Chiapas, Conaye in Ecuador, the Bolivian people in Peru, the Mapuches in Chile, the Lubicon in Saskatchewan, in Alberta, everywhere, indigenous peoples are moving forward to try and save the land from, as they call it in Colombia, the second wave of invasion. The first one had started 500 years ago. A second one has come, and they're organizing to resist it for all of us, and hopefully with all of us.
Manuel, it's been wonderful speaking with you. I look forward to being in touch with you again. And thank you very much.
Thank you, and take care, friend.
Ciao, Manuel.
Bye.
Manuel Rosenthal is in Toronto, a member of RISC, Research and International Support for Colombia, and LASOS, a coalition of Canadian organizations establishing progressive partnerships with Colombia. This is Manu Chao and a track entitled Por el Suelo.
El general en jefe del Ejército Libertador del Sur, Emiliano Zapata, manifiesto zapatista en Nahuatl.
Por el suelo hay una compadrita que ya nadie se para a mirar. Por el suelo hay una mamacita que se muere de no respetar. Pachamama, te veo tan triste, Pachamama, me pongo a llorar. Esperando la última ola, cuídate, no te vaya a mojar. Escuchando la última rola, mamacita, te invito a bailar. Por el suelo, Por el suelo camina mi pueblo, por el suelo hay un agujero, por el suelo camina la raza, mamacita te vamos a matar. Esperando la última ola, Pachamama me muero de pena. Escuchando la última rola, mamacita te invito a bailar.
Por el suelo camina mi pueblo, por el suelo muriendo condena. Por el suelo el infierno quema, por el suelo la raza va ciega.
Esperando la última ola, Pachamama me muero de pena. Escuchando la última rola, mamacita te invito a bailar.
Manu Chao here on CKLN 88.1 FM, Saturday Morning Live, comes to you every Saturday from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. My name is Pedro Sanchez, and Norman Otis Richmond also was with us earlier this morning interviewing Rachel Manley, and he'll be back with you here on Saturday Morning Live next Saturday, the first Saturday of October.